Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The preacher and the teacher. Mustard and Johnson. It's Mustard and Johnson on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Talk all things socks, pats, B's and C's. Right now with Mustard and Johnson on the WEEI Sports Radio Network at WEEI.com.
It is Mustard and Johnson, Sports Radio, WEEI, spending most of this first hour, now into hour number two, talking about the Michelle McPhee report that Hanley Ramirez possibly involved with a fentanyl distribution ring in Massachusetts, maybe beyond. Fascinating story, disturbing story, a lot yet to be uncovered. Certainly no investigation by the authorities. There's just a lot of smoke right now, maybe not a lot of fire. So we're going to continue to talk about that. It is certainly interesting. And it's funny, Larry, I asked in hour number one, does the Red Sox fan care anymore since Hanley Ramirez is not wearing that uniform? And we know that fans do root for laundry, and the Red Sox are coming off two explosive games, 36 hits in the last couple of games, including a season-high 20 last night. From a baseball perspective, does anybody care? But, you know, I'm shocked at how much people do care, because this really is a societal issue that has major implications. So I think I give people a lot of credit for thinking this story is important. I thought we'd just get a lot of Red Sox yahoos. Yeah, who cares? He's not on the team anymore. Let's move on.
Yeah. Well, see, if that's me, and I've had problems in the past with this drug issues, I would be very angry and resent anybody who's involved with sponsoring or otherwise distributing this stuff. It just, you know, they're part of the problem for me having a problem. And I would be very angry about that.
Well, it is an epidemic, as we well know. We talked about New Hampshire being particularly affected by it. Massachusetts isn't far behind. It's been a problem in the middle-aged working class world, red state America particularly. And I don't, and people know I'm from blue state America, and I'm not casting aspersions on red state America, but that has been an issue in a lot of the working class white male communities throughout this country. And I know it probably goes through all demographics, but that's one area where it's been particularly dangerous and particularly lethal. 617-779-7937. We go down to Randolph. John, you're going to kick off hour number two for us. How you
doing, John?
Today?
Hey there.
What's up, John?
Oh, hi. Hi, guys. I love your show, first of all. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling in because I'm quite upset. I'm not disagreeing with the first caller called in about the stigma about fentanyl. I'm in recovery myself right now, and I just had a friend of mine spend a year in jail for dealing it, and he was out for about a week, and he's no longer with us. Because he had to try it again.
Wow.
And, yeah, wow. He's gone. And you can't control what is in the product. Let me tell you what the big fallacy that's going on out there in treating this. It's not the doctors that are prescribing it. That was the case 10 years ago. It's not the case anymore because the doctors are smart enough.
They understand that, right, okay.
Okay, because I know people that legitimately need it because they've had operations, you know, sciatica, you name it, and they can't get it because the doctors, you know, they're really in pain. But where the problem is, and I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a 50-year-old. I make over $100,000 a year, and the reason I did it was because to escape things, not because I was on any kind of medication for it, but I was on it to escape things. And that's how I disagree with the first caller that called up about, oh, I had your medications. You know, that, of course, that's always a smart thing to do. But where the problem lies is in the stigma and the treatment. There is no treatment. You think that this person that was in jail, he went in there, he was suffering from, he wanted to get off it. Most people on it do want to get off it. And you think they would treat him, I mean, it is going like going through death, especially with fentanyl. And because, and like you said, you know, it starts off as heroin, and it just isn't that anymore.
Right.
And,
what were you trying to escape?
I was trying to escape my life because I didn't like what was happening to me. I was doing it as a form of escapism. I was sad. I was trying to escape. I was trying not to face things.
Were you married?
I was.
But, you know, we all look to escape in various forms. And unfortunately, it can be taking drug form. Alcohol is a way to escape. We all understand
exactly.
That.
And I've gone, exactly. You're absolutely right. And I've gone through that many times before and not have done that. But this time I was weak and I turned to it.
Well, how are you doing? How are you doing now?
Actually, I'm doing really well until I found out about my friend.
Right, I can understand that.
I'm enjoying life again. I'm embracing life. But, you know, when the people get arrested or thrown in jail, there's no treatment for them. There's no groups for them.
And it should.
And then when they get arrested, I've never been arrested. And God willing, I'm never going
to
get caught.
Now, do you have a support group you can go to, though, like when you hit these lows?
Luckily I do.
Good.
But most people that do go to these, or if you tell anyone that you go to these, man, you have a stigma on you, and people look down on you. What the government needs to do is have more education and less stigma and more information out there for these people that are trying to get off it. Because I guarantee you 50% of the people that year in these statistics of, you know, people that are dying from it are trying to get off it.
How did you, just quickly, how did you get on it in the first place?
How I got on it was... I was trying to get a hold of pain pills or something because I was just so sad. I didn't want, you know, you don't want to feel the pain.
Hmm. And are you talking about emotional pain or physical pain, John?
Emotional.
And my question is, and on the heels of this story where this associate of Hanley Ramirez had nearly 500 grams. Was it grams? I think it was grams.
Yeah, grams.
Grams of fentanyl. So where is this available, John?
It's everywhere. I was never a big fish, so I just heard through somebody and heard through somebody. I don't know how the chain works, but
would you know right now? God forbid, and I don't want you to. Yeah. I'd rather you go to a group. But if you needed to go out right now and get something, could you?
A month ago, I could. I can't now because I cut off all the contacts that I knew.
So it's entirely accessible. Anybody really looking for it will find it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And that's,
hey, we're proud of you, my man. I hope you keep it up.
Thank you. And please, and just, you know, I'm obviously emotional about this, but I just hope the right word gets out there. And thank you, guys. I love your show.
Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Good luck. Thank you. 617-779-7937. Steve in the car is next with Mustard and Johnson. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. So I got a couple things. First of all, I'd like to tell you that I do listen to your show every weekend, every Saturday for, probably a couple of years now. It's pretty good.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no sweat. Well, the first thing I like to talk about is the Red Sox. So everybody thinks that, well, some people think that the Red Sox had some knowledge of, you know, Hanley's
situation.
So I don't believe that they knew anything about it. And the reason why I don't is because Dombrowski kind of kicked it over to Cora and said that, you know, he was the one that called and said, and if it really was a situation like it has turned out to be, do you think that Dombrowski would have handled it in the same way?
Oh, absolutely not. At that point, all we knew, of course, at least based on what they told us, was it was totally driven by baseball, that they needed to get more Mitch Moreland needed more at bats.
I didn't quite buy that into a situation with the Players Association.
I think in retrospect, you'd have to believe, Steve, this is the cynicism coming out in me, that they knew something was on the horizon.
Right. It would seem like that. I think that Dombrowski would have said, hey, this is, you know, a matter that I had to take care of, and he would have handled himself, and he would never even have brought Cora into it. That's my, you know, my personal opinion. But
see, to me, it wouldn't have bothered me whether they had any inkling of it or not. That's, you know, right. if they got wind of a rumor or something, if they were toying with this thing for a while and then they got wind of this possible problem, that wouldn't bother me.
Right. Yeah. No, I get it.
You know.
I get it. Yeah, and so the other thing I have is I'm also in recovery. I've been for 15 years on and off, man. And, you know, I hear you ask people why they started doing it and why they continue to do it or whatever. You know, why I started, I don't know, I was a kid, you know, and, made some terrible decisions. And then next thing you know, you get hooked and you get, a physical habit where you need it every day.
Mm.
And then,
is it expensive?
You know, fentanyl is not really expensive, which is kind of scary.
Well, that's why. I mean, that's why heroin was such a available and such a crisis for years. And now fentanyl is accessible and inexpensive. That's a really bad combination.
Right. But the thing about fentanyl is that it's very potent right away, but it doesn't last long. So the drug dealers love it because you need
keep on coming back for more, right?
Yeah. So if you did a particular dose of heroin or Oxycontin or, you know, most opiates, they last for, you know, 8 hours or something. Fentanyl, you'll start to get sick again maybe 2 or 3 hours later.
No, brother.
Yeah. So it's you need it, you know.
Now, what would happen with your off moments? You said you're off and on. What would happen? What would trigger it?
You know, I don't personally believe that there are triggers. My belief is it's, you know, it has, this is my personal belief. It's everything to do with me. I'm terribly selfish by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you have a crisis in your
life,
in your life, you want to say, oh, it's because of my mother. My parents were divorced.
Right.
You want to point to something to say, hey, this is it. This is why I'm like that. And I think that's natural for people. But over the years, I've learned that, you know, it's not because of this. It's not because of that. It's not because of a certain trauma. It's because I'm a selfish person and I want to feel better. I don't know how to deal with things.
Right.
Like normal people. I want relief. I just want to feel better. And if you really think about that,
where do you live?
Where I live now?
Yeah.
In the Boston area.
Yeah, I'd like to see you find a good church.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Get addicted to that, and when you go home, look up Psalm 139, and read it.
All right.
Psalm 139.
Hey, Steve, thanks for the call.
Hey,
yeah, no sweat.
I'm proud of you. Proud of you for trying, man.
Let's talk to Sam in Norwich. Norwich, tough. Connecticut. There, tough. Sam.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey,
what's
Sam. Happening? How are you?
What's going on?
What's going on with you down there, one of my favorite towns in Connecticut?
Not too much, gentlemen, but I want to shed a little light on this fentanyl topic.
Okay.
I've used drugs on and off for a couple of years, but so what's happening in the New England area is these kids are getting pill presses. So it's like a hammer press. So there's this big pill epidemic, and they're all going out looking for Xanax and Percocet and whatever, and it's actually pressed with fentanyl.
Okay.
So they're actually manufacturing pills and making their money like that. So if you get like whatever it is, however much 500 grams of fentanyl is, you could make a serious amount of whatever you wanted to make and then sell it for however much you want, and it sedates you, whatever it is, because fentanyl is so potent.
Wow. Okay, so that's how they're doing it. Amazing.
Now, why are you going off and on?
Well, I guess I could say it was selfish, you know. You know, you work a lot. I'm 24 years old. I work a lot, and, you know, you just I guess it's selfishness. I don't know. I've never really thought about it like that. But
What position are you in now?
I'm in a good position right now. I got a good job. I got things going well.
Good, good.
But I just want to say that, you know, fentanyl is a really, really powerful drug. I've only seen it prescribed in a patch form, and that's for people that's, you know, are like end of life. I think one caller said end of life for sure.
Mm.
You know, cancer, you know, someone that got shot or something like that, you know, would have to take fentanyl. But I don't think I've ever seen it prescribed other than a patch.
Hmm. Good information there, Sam. Thank you for the call and continued success. Work hard, okay?
All right. Thanks,
see you later. 617-779-7937. Go ahead, Larry.
The thing that would bother me about this whole Ramirez thing, and you know, there's a lot more information that will come out eventually, is what involvement would you have in something like that? If you're not doing it yourself, are you funneling cash to sponsor it, to widen the distribution area? It's just, there's so many questions out there.
And I'm looking at a piece right now in Rolling Stone, reading about Tom Petty. And, of course, Prince also, I forgot to mention that, a year and a half earlier.
Boy.
I'll tell you, a scary video to watch. It is so sad to watch. It's one of my favorite music videos. It's Tom Petty, Prince, and other superstars, Clapton, playing my favorite Beatles song, George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Mm.
This was when George posthumously was inducted into the Hall of Fame in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And you have both Prince and Petty, who both have died of fentanyl, singing that song. George died of a drug also called nicotine. He died of lung cancer and throat cancer. Clapton, who struggled with heroin addiction and alcohol addiction for years, he came back after he lost his son 25 years ago. He's been clean for about 25 years, but it's so sad now to watch one of my favorite videos. Prince is just playing killer guitar on it. Petty's there. Clapton, of course, is clean now. But those two dying of essentially the same issue, fentanyl. And I'm reading this piece right now, Larry, and I'm just reading it from Rolling Stone's article. Beyond the music industry, fentanyl has emerged as the most dangerous new drug in a generation. Of the nearly 65,000 fatal opioid overdoses in the U.S. in 2016, one-third were fentanyl-related, double the amount from the year before. The drug has surpassed heroin as the leading cause of overdose deaths, and new data shows that fentanyl overdose deaths jumped 30% between July and September of 2016.
It's funny because my father was an alcoholic. And he was a great, great, great musician. Great father, too. But he was a great musician, played with Quincy Jones, Duke Ellington, Count Basie. And I can remember asking him one time, he says, you know, why do you drink? So he didn't just sit there and drink. But when something came up, something that you just couldn't handle emotionally for yourself, and you go and get to the cabinet and get your bottle out and you drink. And I asked him one time, I said, why did you have to drink so much? And he said, as a performer, that you just couldn't get up for the performance every night. You just, you know, sometimes you're just tired. Sometimes you don't feel like it.
Right. And a lot of it's emotional as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and he said for him that, you know, every once in a while you just needed a something to just motivate you to want to get up and go out and get dressed up that night and go out and perform.
Yeah, one of the movies I show in my film class, which I no longer will be teaching since I retired a few days ago, Traffic from 2000, great movie. And the different kinds of drugs that we take in this country, legally and illegally, is amazing. From alcohol to nicotine to opioids to heroin to cocaine. We are a country that we're engulfed by drugs, legally and illegally. This is part of our society.
But see, part of the problem, and even as a parent, when kids are younger, one of the greatest gifts to me, as far as, you know, introducing your kids to the Lord and stuff, but aside from that, if you don't believe in that, that's up to you. But aside from that, teach your kids how to cope with things in life. You're always going to have situations that are going to come up, and some of them are going to be difficult to deal with. But you have to teach your kids how to cope, because even most of the calls that we've been getting this morning, it's about people who could not cope with different things that come up in life. And therefore, you're looking for an outlet. You're looking for a way to escape it. The problem is that's why they call it high, because you can only stay high but so long, and then you have to come back down again.
It's a very tough story, and we started out.
How did you not have to deal with any of that?
What do you mean, how did I not have to deal with that?
How did you escape it, that world?
What world? What are you talking about?
Drugs, or anything like that.
You know, I was always afraid. I was afraid of it.
Yeah, I was too.
Yeah, I was afraid of it.
And I saw that movie Scared Straight, yeah, man. That was enough.
No, I wasn't afraid of going to jail. I was just afraid of overdosing.
Yeah.
So I never touched any of it.
Yeah, I saw a movie with heroin and stuff, man. Yeah. And that putting needles in your body and stuff, that was...
My biggest vice...
I'd rather eat and get fat.
Right. My biggest vice was when I was a kid, it was Schlitz or Bud, and now it's a good pale ale or IPA wherever I go. That's about it.
Yeah, Matt's in there salivating because he had a porterhouse steak last night. But
oh yeah, it was good.
I found out I am a stress eater though. Like I can be fine and then something comes up, man. Hey, go and get a piece of steak or get a cheese.
See, when I'm stressed, I can't eat at all.
So what do you do? Run?
I don't know. Maybe run. I can't eat when I'm worried about something.
Really?
Used to grade papers.
Yeah, great paper. That's what induced the stress. That's why I'm not teaching anymore. 617-779.
That's a tough world, man.
790. Ooh. Rough and tumble world of teaching, I'll tell you. That's why we get 2 months off every year.
We are going to talk some. Listen, hold on. We're going to keep this going because it's obviously something that opens up a door for all of us to talk about and share. But I do have a couple of NBA writers coming up just so we can get an inkling of what their thoughts are with the Celtics draft pick and an overall view of the NBA.
So we'll mix in this discussion, which I think is vital. We'll also talk a little bit about what the Celtics did on Thursday, what's going on in the NBA with LeBron and other free agents. That's all coming up. Mustard and Johnson, we got some extra time going OT, baby, all the way till noon right here on Sports Radio.
Mustard and Johnson are rocking the Saturday Sports Talk on Sports Radio WEEI.
Tom Petty singing that great version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Later on in the song, Prince comes in. So sad in retrospect. But we're going to take a little break from the opioid fentanyl epidemic. Certainly the tie into Hanley Ramirez that we've been talking about the last couple days. Get back into that and your calls coming up. But right now, let's say hello to Chris Forsberg, ESPN Boston staff writer, who covered the Celtics in the NBA draft on Thursday. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, guys. What's going on?
Hey, Chris.
First of all, I guess thinking about the Celtics and, you know, going 27th overall and everything else, not a whole lot of expectations. Yet, according to a lot of the draft nicks, Danny Ainge did pretty well with Robert Williams at that spot.
Yeah, so he was projected as probably a lottery talent. I think on ESPN's big board, he was up at number 12. Now, there were some concerns about a knee injury and his work ethic, all the stuff you typically hear about big guys coming into the draft. But for him to stay on the board, it's a little, you know, you do look at it and say, well, why did he slide and why was he still there? But if he can ever harness the physical talent and what we've seen from him in his 2 years at Texas A&M, he could translate to the pros, and he certainly got a game that's unique to what the Celtics need. They don't have someone who's sort of as springy and athletic as a big man as him, and so it'll be interesting to see how they can how Brad Stevens can work him into this system.
Do you think he can make an impact by the time the Celtics are back in the postseason next year?
Yeah, you know, it's always tough, right? Because certainly it's different expectations for guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and when you're drafting at number three, I mean, even with Jason Tatum last year, I don't think we expected him to be a starter and to do what he did in the postseason. You don't want to put too much expectations, especially if the Celtics are healthy. There's going to be a real competition for minutes. But when I do look at the big man spots, there is room for him. I think we saw last year they tried to kind of figure that out, especially after Daniel Tice went down. You know, Greg Monroe got brought in midseason, and they were always kind of hunting and searching for the right lineups and the right matchups. I could certainly see his skill set translating. You know, he's a guy that wants to run at the rim and throw down lobs, and he's got great defensive potential. If he can show that he can be a consistent defender on that end of the court, Brad Stevens won't hesitate to put him in there. I'll go in with cautious expectations for a guy picked late in the first round, finding a way on a roster that's going to be pretty depth heavy, but it's an encouraging sign that if he is playing in the postseason, that he made great strides.
I tell you, Boston Sports Tonight had his coach on, Billy Kennedy, and I tell you, this guy put me to sleep. I mean, really, oh my gosh. So I do think sometimes when you read about guys disappearing during games and lack of concentration, I still think it all depends what team some of these guys end up with. And I think the Celtics are great. Brad Stevens is a great teacher and the like, and the people he's going to be around, I think, could have quite an effect on him, maturing him.
Yeah, you know, I think back to even like Jaylen Brown. When he came out of college, the numbers were terrible, and he played in a system that just wasn't conducive. They sort of gummed everything up, and, you know, Jaylen's strengths weren't accentuated. And I'll admit, I was the first one to say, like, I don't know if he's going to translate to the NBA level because I just didn't see it in the college game. Well, what the Celtics do so well is they get a guy, they say, all right, how can we focus on him in an NBA offense, and where can we put him? And so a guy like Robert Williams, Celtics like to typically spread the floor with their big man, and they like him. They can shoot threes. I'm sure they're going to put in focus on him trying to learn that aspect of the game. And, you know, but right now, if he is a pick and roll guy who can run at the rim and give you a little bit of athleticism, you know, Brad will figure out a way on second units to spotlight that. And so with the way the game opens up at the NBA level, with the way defenses are going to have to focus on guys like Kyrie and Gordon, it could be a little bit easier for a guy like Robert Williams to for his strengths to be accentuated. I guess that's the message there is always like, don't go too much by what you see at college. It's such a different game when it gets to this level. There's so much more space. I wonder how that will translate, and that's on Brad, who certainly seems to tap into what his players do best and finds a way to accentuate that on the court.
Is there going to be anything else pertaining to the Celtics as far as, you know, these packages for various players that are out there free agent-wise, or do you think the Celtics are pretty much going to stand pat now?
Well, so I think they have a luxury. I think they can do nothing and feel pretty confident in getting back Gordon and Kyrie from injury, and that a team that went to the East Finals and got that experience will still be very competitive and is probably still a title contender. I guess the one thing that's always in the back of your mind is you look at the way the Warriors swept the team that beat you in the finals, and you say, you know, do you need a little something more if you want to be a true title contender? You know, for me, when a guy like Kawhi becomes available, and who knows how that'll all play itself out, but it's just so rare that a top five talent is sitting there. And I know there's pain points to going and getting him, and no one wants to move on from Jaylen Brown when you think about the potential for the future, or, you know, even if you were somehow able to manufacture a deal that with a sign and trade of Marcus Smart or whatever, however you had to cobble that together, it's going to hurt because you're going to have to give up a lot to get that guy. But it's just so rare that someone like that is on the market and at a value that you could possibly go get. So I do think the Celtics have to continue to investigate whether it's Kawhi or whatever other next disgruntled superstar that comes on the market. It's sort of the same way they went and got Kyrie. It's just you have to be ready when these guys become available and have the assets to go pursue them. You know, it might not necessarily be the obvious choice there, but I think someone will bubble up, and the Celtics, if they really want, have the assets more so than any other team in the league to make a big splash. It just comes down to, you know, do they want to go all in right now? And certainly with the way the Warriors look, that's daunting. There is a notion of thinking of, you know, continue to use these picks, draft the next sort of iteration of your club, all while remaining competitive with what you've got now. I guess the overarching theme, though, is that the Celtics are in a really good spot, and that's got to be really encouraging for this team, thinking that they have potential to compete for the next decade.
What would it take, Chris, right now? Say Danny said, okay, we are committed to bringing one of the top five players in the NBA, Kawhi Leonard, to the Celtics. What would it take right now?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to spitball, I would say, you know, you start with Jaylen Brown, because I think what the Spurs would want in that case is young talent and draft picks. So you're looking at something like Jaylen, probably that pick that's everything but top one protected next year from the Kings.
Sacramento, yeah.
Maybe something like the Grizzlies pick for a little further out, that because it's probably not going to convey immediately. But these are really good picks, and so, you know, that's a steep price to pay, and then you'd have to match the salary, so you're going to have to throw in a lot of other guys, whether that's Terry Rozier and Marcus Morris, a lot of the depth that you've accumulated that was so vital to last year's postseason run. You know, it's one of those things, like, if you think back to last year when they made the Kyrie trade, everyone sat there and was like, wait, they gave up Isaiah and Jay and the Brooklyn pick, and people, like, freaked out. But that's the price of going to get a top talent. And it hurts in the moment, but it's just, again, I go back to it, it's just so rare that you can find a way to go get a top five guy, and you just have to be diligent. You have to investigate that. And listen, at the end of the day, the price tag, if they keep asking for more and more, you just back off and say, you know, we're in a pretty good situation. We can ride this out. But I do think they have to be diligent and explore that, because the possibility, if you were to add a guy like Kawhi, it just takes you to a whole nother level in terms of what this team could do.
See, I'm still not satisfied with what went on in San Antonio. I saw a guy sitting on the bench, and it appeared to me as though he quit. He just, coach lost his wife, et cetera, and so on, and it just looked like Leonard just quit. And I'm not saying he did. I'm saying it appeared that way. And I have not read enough extensive reporting as to what really went on out there. Have you heard?
Yeah, it seems like it's so weird, too, right, because it's the Spurs. And it's almost like these things never happen with
right.
the organization. And I thought the most damning thing was at the end of the year when I think Tony Parker said, you know, he had an injury, but it was way worse than Kawhi's. And yet Kawhi was still out and Parker was working his way back on the court. I mean, it's just really tough to know what went on and why. You know, I think that's part of what the Celtics would have to do is really dig in and try to figure that out. Is this a guy who, you know, for lack of a better term, quit on his team and just didn't want to be out there? Was it a guy who was worried that if he went out there and hurt himself again, he was going to ruin that chance at the Supermax deal and was thinking more about his payday? You know, it's weird because Kawhi is also very quiet, you know, he doesn't really come out and say what he's feeling, but he's got this crew behind him that sort of floats their messages through the media, and you know, that probably ruffled feathers with the Spurs as well. So there's certainly some detective work you have to do there, and could be satisfied that the guy you're bringing in fits your culture, and also that he would potentially want to be here long term. I mean, if he's just hell bent on going to LA, trade cautiously. That being said, I just go back to it. You know, sometimes you just got to take a risk. And I think what we've seen is when you get guys to Boston, they tend to like it and they tend to see the potential and they tend to like working with Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge. And so sometimes you just got to bet on yourself and that you can figure that out and get to a good place with the guy that's coming in.
Chris, can I give you a multiple choice quiz right now?
Ooh,
you ready for
right.
this? All right. Being the retired teacher, I'm still hanging on by a thread here. I still want to do some quizzing here. So this is the multiple choice question. The Celtics will say goodbye to A, Terry Rozier, B, Marcus Smart, C, neither, D, both.
Ooh. Well, I would say the most likely scenario is Terry Rozier's trade value will never be higher. And as much as Danny Ainge loves him, we've joked repeatedly that he's eighth Ainge child. He really just likes this kid, and he's from such a different background. And but he just saw the potential in this kid. And even though everyone kind of mocked him for taking him 15th that year in 2015, he had confidence that Terry Rozier was going to emerge. And I think that would be a tough thing for Danny to swallow, especially while he's still on a reasonable contract. But I think the Celtics are in a situation where they probably have to pay a little bit to keep Marcus Smart here, but he's that sort of intangible guy, the one guy that every championship team has that's just sort of, you know, maybe doesn't make sense statistically, but he does all the little stuff. And I just think he's really important if you want to be a title contender. And that's not to say that Terry Rozier wouldn't be, but with Kyrie in front of him, and as much as you need all the ball handling you can get, I think Danny Ainge is, at the end of the day, is a ruthless businessman. So if I had to guess, I'd say Terry Rozier is the one that gets moved.
All right. Chris,
hey, can the Celtics keep Baines, Monroe, and Williams?
More likely they'll keep Baines, and because they really liked what he brought. He's going to have to probably settle for the mid-level exception. He'll get a little bit of a salary boost, but he took a real cut to come here. I would say it's unlikely with Monroe. It just didn't really work out in terms of fit. And I mean, if you felt like he just needed another sort of back to the basket big, you could maybe get him back at a reasonable money. But I think the more likely scenario would be you keep Baines. He moves into the backup role once all these guys are healthy, and then you hope that Robert Williams advances. But you also get Daniel Theis back, and I think we've kind of forgot how good he was becoming in his rookie year and brought in from Germany. That gives you a little bit more depth at the big man spot, and maybe that's enough to get you through.
Right. Are you going to be coming out for the summer league? You going to cover it?
You know what? This is the first year they don't have a lottery pick, so I don't know if I'm going to Vegas this year. We used to go to Utah, and that was fun, in Orlando before that. But I don't know yet. We'll see.
Are you kidding me? You got all these big men out there. They could change the NBA back a little bit.
I am interested to see it. We were talking about that, Larry, about whether this is whether this will be a, start the renaissance of going back to the
good old days.
We'll see. It would be fun. It would be nice to have some teams that were where that didn't want to stretch their big men straight up in midcourt and shoot.
All right. Yeah. Should be a great summer, Chris. Enjoy.
Chris, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take
care. Chris Forsberg, ESPN staff writer, ESPN Boston, on top of the Celtic and NBA situation for you right here on Sports Radio WEEI.
Let's get you back to more of Mustard and Johnson on Sports Radio WEEI.
Larry Johnson's favorite Stone songs for obvious reasons. Paint It Black. He loves the sitar. That's what it is. Oh, I love that song. 617-779-7937. Thanks to Chris Forsberg, Celtic Draft. You know, I love the Celtics, though, Larry. Like every team, we didn't expect him to drop this low. We thought surely he was going to be a lottery pick. Some people projected him as high as 12.
He would have been in the top 10 the year before.
That's what they say, of course. We shall see what happens. Meanwhile, we've been spending a good deal of this morning talking about the story that Michelle McPhee broke about Handley's possible connection to a fentanyl distribution ring in New England. We've been hearing from a lot of people who have been touched by that drug, touched by other drugs. We are in the middle of an opioid crisis in this country, and who knows what Handley Ramirez's connection to that. A lot of speculation right now, and so we're going to talk about that probably in hour number three as well. So get on the line if you'd like to talk about that at 617-779-7937. Mike in the car, you're next on Sports Radio WEEI.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, real quick, you know, you touched on Prince playing that guitar solo at that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. And, man, that's one thing, you know, when he passed away, I think that was one of the most underrated aspects of him as an artist was his guitar playing ability. You know, you think of it, you think of his lyrics, you think of his singing, you know, dancing, the whole performance. But, man, he was a hell of a guitar player, and I think a lot of people forget that.
Well, to be honest with you, he could play every instrument in the band.
Oh, he was brilliant. His father was a musician, and he inherited it. Unlike Larry Johnson, did not inherit any talent at all. This guy, Prince's father was a big-time Minnesota musician, Minneapolis area. But, yeah, I was kind of surprised when I saw that video. I didn't realize how good a guitar player Prince was. But as I was saying earlier, Mike, it's such a sad dimension to it now. Both went down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with fentanyl. Absolutely. Of course, Petty and Harrison in the Traveling Wilburys together, and absolutely loved George Harrison.
I'm a bit of an amateur musician myself. Yeah. I wish I had a tenth of those guys' talent. But anyways, just two quick things. First off, you know, the last couple of callers who have admitted to having issues and whatnot, and, you know, my best of luck to them, and my hopes were with them for remaining in recovery. But what I loved hearing from them was that they didn't shy away from their own responsibility.
Right.
You know, what you hear a lot of now is, you know, it's all, you know, because of someone else's fault. So it was nice to hear them accepting some responsibility for their own actions.
Absolutely.
And as far as the Red Sox and whether or not they knew something, what I wonder, and I don't know, I don't have the answer to this. I think maybe you guys might or could find out is, you know, if they did get some wind of what was going on with Handley and they used that as a reason to let him go, what I wonder is if the union, the players union, would then have a reason to come back at them with some type of grievance, because just being mentioned as a possible target of an investigation, I mean, you guys have said it yourself, no indictment, no
nothing,
you know, no pending arrest as far as we know. It just looks like, you know, he happened to be associated with a guy who got arrested, and, you know, it doesn't look good. The optics are bad, but the bottom line is that he's done nothing. He's, as of right now, not been charged with a crime and done no wrong. So if they admit to even allowing that to be a factor in his release.
But they wouldn't admit that, though, would you?
Well, that's what I'm saying. No, of course not. But what I'm saying is you're hearing a lot of callers and a lot of commenters saying, oh, they must have known, they must have known, they must have known. If they knew, they'll never, ever, ever admit it. They'd be opening themselves up potentially to a grievance, maybe even a lawsuit.
Right.
That's a good point.
That's all I had, guys.
All right. Thanks, Mike. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We're going to take a quick break, get you updated on things. Hour number three, do not go away. Yes, there's nothing wrong with your radios, Mustard and Johnson, here till noon, right here on Sports Radio, WEEI.
Blaming it on doctors.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s
machines on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.